Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Investments. Complicated? Not when you talk to a financial broker about a Zurich investment plan.
Earlier this week, the Shelburne Hotel removed four statues of Egyptian and African women bearing torches, saying that they depicted two Nubian princesses and their slave girls. The move was welcomed by Black Lives Matter activists, but criticised by the Dublin Georgian Society. However, art historians have now uncovered evidence that none of the four statues depicted enslaved women. I'm joined to discuss this by art historian and associate lecturer at the University of London, Kyle Layden. Kyle, what did you find?
Well, hello, Philip. I should probably say at the very outset of all of this that when I first penned my letter to the Irish Times revealing the existence of a trade catalogue from the casters of the statues outside the Shelburne, I thought I was only pointing out a primary source which hundreds of people would have already located and thought it was a non-divisive way to end the matter. So I had no conception of the debate that I actually would unleash. But leaving that aside, what I actually discovered when I heard about the removal of the statues was that, well, first of all, I obviously realised that it was an illegal removal because apparently there has been no planning permission pursuant to Part 4 of the Planning Act. However, the identification of the slaves did rather jar with me because I had been aware of the statues whilst living in Dublin and had always believed them to be four princesses. So I basically carried out a little research to see what exactly they were, and in doing so managed to locate the original trade catalogue which had been used by the Shelburne Hotel to choose the statues in the first place. In that printed catalogue, it appears that the man who originally created and sculpted the statues does not actually refer to them as slaves. He did not intend them to be read as slaves. They are intended in the catalogue, for anyone who looks this up, to be a pendant pair, displayed on plinths at the same height. That again would somewhat suggest equality, as it does at the Shelburne, where they're all displayed at the same similar height. And it was clear that the Egyptian statue, at least, was not in any way to be read as a slave. It was wearing a royal Egyptian headdress, which would indicate that it was a princess. Now, the other statue which is there, which in the trade catalogue is described under the now quite offensive term of negress, to the modern eyes, it's not clear what exactly the status of that statue should be. So in order to guide my work there, I referred to the work of the assistant director of the Hitchens Center for African and American Studies at Harvard. He has written widely on visual representations of female African slaves, and as he states, they were almost invariably represented nude. The Shelburne statue is clothed in expensive striped silk and wears a golden headband. Reading more deeply into that work by the Hitchens Center, it appeared that it was well known at the time these statues were made that the Nubian community had married on several occasions into the Egyptian royal family, and as well as that, Nubia was the source of much of Egypt's luxury goods and royal brides. It therefore seemed much more likely to me that the two statues were indeed intended to be read as princesses and certainly not to be read as slaves.
Even though, Kyle, the two figures that we thought were the slave girls have their heads bowed in what would appear to be a subservient or perhaps respectful position.
Well, again, I've heard a lot of commentary on this particular issue, and I think what the stature of the statues presents to us is more the aesthetic and awareness of the body that the sculptor Moreau had. If one is to take the stance that is adopted by the statues outside the hotel of holding something directly above one's head, you will actually find that the head naturally comes forward. In addition to that, these statues were always intended to be displayed at a height of about 12 feet. So again, if you think about this practically, if a statue was looking either straight ahead or up at a height of 12 feet, you simply wouldn't see any of the features on the face. So as I said, the way that they are represented says more about the artist's skill with the body than it does in his awareness of anatomy than it does anything to do with, you know, trying to make out that they have a particular status.
It suffices to say that you have established fairly conclusively that the artist's motivation when designing these was not to depict slaves, but to depict princesses or, well, let's just use the term black women instead of the term that he used. There was no mention of slaves. What then about all of this conversation around whether there are manacles around their ankles or not?
Well, again, the manacled issue was something that I wanted to look into myself. I think personally, but again, this is an opinion, that when one views them in person. They clearly do not appear to be manacles. They are simply bangles around the ankles of these statues. In addition to that, all four of the statues wear the same bangles around their ankles. So certainly, given that the orthodox approach was that at least two of the statues were princesses, clearly they wouldn't have been demonstrated or shown being manacled. So that in itself would have demonstrated that there was something problematic about the reading of those bands as manacles.
Again, and does the catalogue...
It is revealed that both statues are shown draped and wearing jewellery. And again, if one looks at the statues, really the only jewellery they actually are wearing are these bangles. So again, it seems much more likely that these were intended to be read as indicators of high social status as opposed to shackles. Now, looking at the issue of shackles itself, in going through the researches that I went through, I tried to figure out where on earth the idea of them being shackles had come from, and I can find absolutely no reference in any source to the statues being shackled. I believe that the reference to the statues being slaves was originally derived from Elizabeth Bowen's 1951 book on the history of the Shelburne. I can find no older source stating that they were slaves other than that. She does not say that the statues are shackled, and I can't find any source created before 2010 which says they are.
So not slaves, bangles, not manacles, not designed or ever conceived as slaves by the person who made them. What about the people who bought them, the original owners of the Shelburne? Would you like to speculate as to what was in their mind in 1867 when they chose for the front of a hotel in Dublin, in Europe, the statues of black women from North Africa?
Well, of course, it's very difficult for me to put myself in the place of someone who was looking at these things in 1867. And, you know, at the same time, I haven't had the benefit of actually visiting the copious archives that are actually kept in the Shelburne itself. But having said both of those things, what I would refer to is that these statues are really part of an ongoing discourse that was going on throughout Europe during this period called Egyptomania. Basically, after Napoleon entered Egypt and his campaigns in Egypt from 1798 to 1801, Egypt, for the first time in history, was really opened to European archaeologists and European scientists. They both headed off to Egypt and began examining ancient Egyptian culture. Back in Europe, this caused a huge mania for all things Egyptian. Now, this is, in some degree, problematic, and I do accept that. There can be no doubt that these statues form part of that common 19th century artistic, there's no other word for it, fetishization of the culture of the East as licentious and sexualized. This is something the post-colonial academic Edward Said famously said, that that caste created a cultural hierarchy where the Occident was centered and the Orient was othered. There's no doubting that these statues are part of that Orientalist discourse. But two of you were in 1867, all they would have read these statues as being would be that they were four princesses from the Egyptian region who expressed something about the luxury of the hotel inside rather than anything about a political statement about slavery or anything to do with slavery. It was entirely referring to the sort of opulent luxury of the new hotel building which they formed part of the facade of.
Princesses, not slaves, bangles, not manacles, but now, given the context of the conversation and the cultural moment that we are at, could they still be felt to be offensive? And could we be, if they were reinstated, deliberately rubbing in the noses of people who have sensitivities around these areas, our ideas of what our culture should be and should look like and how it should be represented?
Absolutely, and I entirely agree with that. I've always said from the very beginning of this debate that regardless of how true the slave identification actually was, and it does appear to be entirely untrue, the fact that there is clearly a very widely held misconception in Ireland that they are slaves could be enough in itself to justify their removal. Of course, I accept that. It's not my place as a white man to comment on the impact the statues would have on a woman or a person of colour who views them today, but I fully accept that such impact could well be a reason for their removal. From my own perspective, I would hope to think that the historic importance of the statues, both as part of one of the most important 19th century architectural ensembles in Ireland, and indeed as sort of silent sentinel testaments to the history of Ireland. One of the statues, as I'm sure is well known, bears pockmarks from bullets fired during the Easter Rising. For those reasons, I think there are very strong historic and social history reasons to maintain the statues, but that is very much a matter to be weighed up by the planning department and the Irish public against the opinions of those who are in an infinitely better position than me to comment on current conceptualisations of their meaning.
Okay.
It's certainly not my place to talk for women or people of colour.
Kyle Layden, thank you very much. I was going to say for drawing a line under this one, but no doubt it has actually fanned the flames of this particular debate.